WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. This is The Opening Bell. I'm Bennett Wakenight stepping in for Steve Grzanich. It's Thursday, October the 17th. Plenty of stuff to be talking about on today's show. The Opening Bell, as Steve is away sick again. The sickness is that time of the year. It's getting everybody, I'm sure everybody in the offices, everybody around the house, around the family. Nobody is safe from the seasonal allergies and the colds that are kicking everybody out of their day-to-days. And just got to remember, wash those hands, stay on top of keeping those allergies at bay. And we'll continue on with our everydays. But plenty to be talking about in the business world today. Plenty to be talking about here in Chicago. Got a great show lined up for you. We'll be talking with our weekly Associated Bank thought leader conversation. Don Lloyd is stepping in. Updates on the Brexit conversations that we've had. Plenty to be talking about on that range. We'll be talking a little bit about blockchain as well, answering some of those questions a little bit later after the 5:30 news. Dale Buss, the contributor from Forbes, Wall Street Journal, and Chief Executive Magazine, joined us plenty of times before talking about the GM strike. We'll be talking plenty about the strikes today here in the Chicago Teachers Union that will begin right around 6:30 a.m. But today we will be talking about the GM strike that closed a tentative deal with the 4,800 laborers that were on strike for almost a month. 48,000 laborers over in Detroit that were on strike for nearly a month earlier this week. But we will be talking about everything that you need to be kicking your day off with as far as business headlines, Wall Street headlines, numbers, and kicking the day off around and covering everything when it comes to the day-to-day. So starting off the day, checking the Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook, the Dow Jones, and across the board as far as Wall Street, Dow Jones starting a little bit lower in the red, 27,000 nearly, down 22.82 points. S&P 500 down nearly 6 points. NASDAQ down nearly 24.5 points. So across the board in America today is going to be a down day. Over in Europe, though, things are looking greener. The FTSE up 44.56 points. The DAX up 124, the CAC up 30.3 points. Over in Asia, things are a mixed board. The Dow in Asia and the Nikkei, correction, the down 21.6 points, the Hang Seng up 184, and the Shanghai across the board down just nearly 2 points. Looking at a few business headlines to start the day, we will be, as you heard, a developing story about Elijah Cummings. He was the a representative from Maryland, the Democrat, and the House Oversight Chairman, passed away early this morning at 68 from, quote, complications concerning longstanding health challenges. Cummings had represented Maryland's 7th Congressional District since 1996 and was at the center of the impeachment inquiry into Donald Trump in his role in the House Oversight Committee. The chairman, the congressman, had failed to return to an unspecified medical procedure and missed 2 legislative roll call votes on Wednesday, first day after 2-week recess, according to the Baltimore Sun. In a statement on September 30th, Cummings said that his doctors expected him to be able to return to Washington when, quote, the House comes back into session in 2 weeks. It said that he's been in constant communication with the staff and congressional colleagues while he was away, so plenty to be more to be talking about as far as this story developing over the morning and throughout the rest of the week. And throughout the long term of the rest of the year, quite frankly, the insight into the impeachment inquiry will be definitely on its toes from here on out with the passing of Representative Elijah Cummings. Closer to home, the CTU teacher strike is today. The union voted to reject the final contract offer from Chicago Public Schools and will go on strike later this morning starting at 6:30 a.m. Negotiations between the two sides ended early Wednesday as both CPS officials and CTU representatives prepared for a strike vote. But Lori Lightfoot hopes that both sides will return to the negotiation table soon. She said, quote, we will remain at the table and will hope that CTU will as well. Jesse Sharkey, on the other hand, said the CTU president, I hope that this work stoppage will end soon. This has to be about our children. We want to make this a short strike. We want to make this a strike that wins improvements for our schools, wins the dignity and respect for our teacher. So the ball's in her court for that for now. The WGN-TV is also reporting that CTA will allow all CPS students to ride the CTA for free today and until the end of the strike between 5:30 a.m. and 8:30 p.m. And for all the rest of your information about childcare and camp options today, visit WGNradio.com and click the green tab at the top of the page. We'll be updating information for you and all the news that comes from the CTU strike throughout this morning and however long it takes to resolve the discussions between CPS and the city of Chicago. Also, developing over across the pond, over in the UK, the EU, rumblings of a Brexit deal have come as the last-ditch talks have wrapped up. Negotiators from the UK and the EU have reached a draft Brexit deal in the 11th hour of talks and ahead of crucial EU summit on Thursday. The Sterling rose on news after the UK made concessions over the Irish border and an issue that had proven to be the biggest obstacle to a deal up to that point. The pound was 0.8% higher against the dollar at 1.2929, reaching 5-month high. So things are looking good over in the UK. The UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson, in a tweet, quote, said, "We've got a great new deal and takes back control. Now Parliament should get Brexit done on Saturday so we can move on to other priorities like the cost of living, the NHS, violent crime, and our environment." So we shift now to the beginning of our program. We will be checking in a little bit later on the strike over in GM. But right now we've got the Associated Bank Thought Leader Conversation checking in. Don Lloyd, SVP of Capital Markets, Foreign Exchange, and Derivatives at Associated Bank, sat down with Steve Grzanich to talk a little bit about Brexit negotiations, the Bitcoin and blockchain, and the role that that will play later on in banks.
Don, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Steve, good to see you again. Good morning.
We have lots going on that's right in your wheelhouse, and I kind of debated where to begin, but I think I'm going to start with the U.S.-China trade thing. There has been some idea that there might be phase one of a deal, and now we're hearing that because the U.S. House passed a measure that was supportive of Hong Kong, Chinese are not going to buy ag products now, as they promised. What's going on?
The never-ending story. The twisting and turning of the political machine and who's going to get what. And let's dress it up under a different guise and call it phase one, call it phase two. At the end of the day, let's try to find some common ground to negotiate. So what was on the table? Hey, yeah, the tariffs that were going to go into effect in October, let's push those. November's still on the table. Let's open up the ags from 40 to 50 million, and voila, that evaporates and that goes away. All because now the Hong Kong China situation and how the U.S. is looking at some work out of Congress coming to let's review Hong Kong and let's review the relationship between Hong Kong and China and throw that into the mix. And all of a sudden, your phase one changes into something else. So, on the table, off the table, it's going to ebb and flow, and it's going to ebb and flow at a very granular level very quickly, I think, and continue to do that for a while. But that's where we are now,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's one of those things where we have these tariffs in place, and by all good measures of what's happening, the trade war is impacting the global economy.
Absolutely, and will continue to impact it. But, you know, let's not lose sight on what the end purpose really is. I mean, when you're talking about business, you're talking about China, you know, you're talking about integrity and honesty and intellectual property rights and whatnot. However you fall down on that, the current administration is sitting there trying to address those situations. They view them as unequal and unlevel playing fields, and they're trying to use tariffs and they're trying to use economics to sit there and try to get that back into, rein that back in. At the end of the day, if you look at it from the Chinese perspective, I think intellectual property rights and wanting that information and getting that information by sitting there saying, hey, if you want to sit there and open up companies here in China or trade with us, here's the information we want. Some people use money to do that. Some people use information to do that. It's just another piece of the negotiating thing. My position on the whole thing is, hey, U.S., negotiate better. Learn to negotiate better. And they're doing it through tariffs and they're doing it through punishment, if you will. But to me, it will help improve Americans' point of view on their negotiating power, because we're being out-negotiated right now.
Yeah, it feels like it. And so, as you know, consumers watch what's happening here, because we do the play-by-play of this every day.
Yeah.
What would a good deal include? Does it include those intellectual property rights adjustments and reforms in those areas? What would the deal look like?
Yeah, from a U.S. perspective, I think it would. From a U.S. perspective, it would be to rein that in a little bit so that China just doesn't have access to whatever they want, whenever they want, under the guise of if you want to do business with us. They're a growing economy, fairly large economy, but they're not the only game around. We want to be involved with them. They want to be involved with us. And that's a sticking point right now. So, you know, what does it mean for the U.S. economy? Sure, for all this to go away, you'll see a big lift in the economy. You'll see everything settle down. You'll see the interest rate yield curve settle down and the volatility that we've seen in there. Every little piece that comes out, phase one that's there and then evaporates or changes into whatever it's going to be called next, and the negotiations that go on, have a ripple effect through the economy, and it impacts people's jobs, it impacts their lives, it impacts investments and retirements from my standpoint, whether it's the stock market or the yield curve. The yield curve flattening and moving around like it is impacts financial institutions' profitability and the cost of capital for companies to go out and fund themselves and grow. So it's all linked together, and that's going to continue to be that way. And the sooner we put this stuff to bed and come with a deal, the sooner that risk diminishes, and we'll find some other risk to replace it. But again, the world is just a pool of money sloshing around. It's looking for some return for some amount of risk.
Don Lloyd with Associated Bank there talking with Steve Grzanich about world trade. They'll be following up a little bit about blockchain and the role that it has on in the banks going on later in the second half of the conversation on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. A couple stocks of local interest. Baxter International down 87.02 trading. We have BTU, that's Peabody Energy Corporation, down 0.11%, 15.7 trading. Cars.com up 0.23%, trading at 10.63. This is the opening bell on WGN. I'm Ben Wakenight, stepping in for Steve Grzanich today, jumping back into the Associated Bank Thought Leader conversation, where Don Lloyd is standing by, sitting. He sat down with Steve Grzanich, and they talked a little bit about, they wrapped up their conversation by discussing the role of blockchain in the banking system.
I want to end our conversation today talking about blockchain technology, currency transfers, financial services. Are you guys using blockchain? Has this made it to your world?
We are not. There is talk about that. And every so often, people way smarter than me come around and they look to reinvent the wheel. And the wheel is how in the foreign exchange market do currencies get exchanged and does money move? And you know, the big bad banks are the ones that sit in the middle of that. But if you look at the role of the bank, banks are aggregators. You know, we aggregate savers and borrowers. We aggregate buyers and sellers. And it's exactly what we do in the currency markets. You have people who want to sell euros and people who want to buy euros. And it's tough for them to meet individually, you know, without an intermediary. And the banks act as that intermediary. And blockchain's great because you sit there and they say, well, I know, Steve, that you own those euros and they're going to be sent to me. Well, there's other roles that the banks play in that. First of all is price discovery. At what price are we going to do that? So if you're sitting here in Chicago and I'm sitting over in Europe and I've got euros to go and you need euros, I know those are your euros and I need dollars and we're going to sit there and exchange things. Well, great. I'll give you euros. You give me your dollars. But you give them to me first. Well, you know, blockchain's going to sit there and say, I actually own these dollars. It's just a movement. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then you go first. You know, because if there's a problem, how do I get a hold of you? Now, with a bank as an intermediary, there's a problem. I go to the bank. Hey, didn't get my euros, mm-hmm. didn't get my dollars. Go investigate it. And there's a mechanism for doing that. Second thing is price discovery. At what exchange rate do we do this at? You know, banks, because they're aggregators, aggregate with other market makers who are banks or investment banks or the money service bureaus or whatever. And those prices get tracked and monitored And it's available to the public. So a euro price in Chicago is the same as a euro price in New York or London or Singapore or any place else. There's price transparency there. If you and I are just dealing together, where does that price transparency get out? Mm-hmm. It gets out in the market. Okay. What other roles do banks play? Well, one of the things that we do is that when you and I do a transaction and the banks is the intermediary, you're run through a filter and I'm run through a filter to make sure that we're not bad people, that we're not into money laundering or terrorist activities. Who's going to do that? Who's going to OFAC check? You know, I don't know you. You don't know me. How do we know that we're both really legit legal people? The banks take on that responsibility, and the banks look at that, and they scrub that, and they view that, and they report that, and they stop those transactions if there's fraud. So you lose that with blockchain. You know, blockchain's a great idea. They just haven't found the right application for it yet. And the currency markets, the way they're built now, and which is pretty much the same way they've been built for the last 30 or 40 years, is quite efficient, quite effective, and pretty good checks and balances in place. So it'll be interesting to see how block technology changes from what it is now, if they're going to go from person to person or user to end user, mm-hmm. cutting out the middleman. But right now, I think you need a middleman, my opinion. It's like buying a car, you know? You know, you
I
got to
feel like
a
I'm
car
getting
dealer.
Ripped off when I buy a car.
There is, there is some money in between. Yeah. You know, there's a cost of doing that. At the end of the day, though, you're buying euros, selling dollars. I'm buying your dollars and I'm selling you euros. There is a price risk transfer that occurs there. And right now, banks as an aggregator take that price risk on and sit there and aggregate that out because they have tons of buyers and tons of sellers that are constantly coming into the market. So they can diffuse that risk and smooth it out even more. You don't have that. I don't have that. Point to point doesn't have that. So I don't know. I good idea. Keep working on it. Not ready to be cut into as a steak right. and eaten yet, but you know, let's keep thinking. That's my view on the whole thing.
Don Lloyd, Associated Bank, the SVP of Capital Markets, Foreign Exchange, and Derivatives at Associated Bank, sat down with Steve Gruzanich there on the weekly Thought Leader Conversation. Visit WGNradio.com for all your Thought Leader Conversations, the opening bell page, along with AssociatedBank.com/Thought Leadership. News is next on WGN.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke, Senior Editor at Chicago Inno, with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio. A rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know. Chicago-based VC firm S2G Ventures led a $14 million investment in Future Meat Technologies, an Israeli startup that makes meat in a lab directly from animal cells. The startup says its manufacturing model results in 99% less land use and 80% less greenhouse gas emissions. A University of Chicago alumnus that had a role in developing the lithium-ion batteries that now power our cell phones, laptops, and electric cars has been awarded a Nobel Prize in chemistry. John B. Goodenough was one of three scientists awarded the Nobel Prize last week for their work in the field of modern battery chemistry. And FedEx has partnered with Walgreens to allow people to drop off online returns at thousands of Walgreens locations. Taking a page out of the Kohl's Amazon partnership, Walgreens is hoping the return program can boost in-store traffic. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. To learn more, head to ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Gruzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. This is The Opening Bell on 720 WGN. I'm Bennett Wakenight, stepping in for Steve Gruzanich today. And so today in Chicago, we will be talking a lot about the Chicago Teachers Union strike that will begin today around 6:30 a.m. It's been ongoing for the last month or so, the negotiations and bubbling up all the way until the last point. But over on the other side of the lake, conversations have been talking about negotiations for GM workers. And the conversation there has been going on much longer than the last minute conversations here in Chicago. The strike between GM workers and GM manufacturer has been going on for nearly a month right now. But late yesterday afternoon, a tentative deal was struck between GM workers and GM. And joining us now to talk about that and update us is Dale Buss, contributor at Forbes, Wall Street Journal, Chief Executive Magazine. Dale, welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Thanks, Bennett. Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Yeah, so we've been talking about this, the culmination of this from the beginning about a month ago when we you and Steve Grzanis touched on the beginning of the strike rumblings, but now we are seeing the end of it potentially within the next 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, I think the chances are very high we're seeing the end of it. In fact, today the presidents and other officers of UAW locals from across the country are gathering in Detroit, where UAW leadership is going to outline the basic terms of this tentative deal that was reached this week after the president of the union, Gary Jones, and the CEO of General Motors, Mary Barra, got involved to hammer things out. And what these and what happens from here is after these folks are briefed, then there will be a ratification vote of all of the rank and file UAW members. And it's a pretty good bet at this point, after they've been striking for around a month, collecting $250 a week in take-home pay instead of, you know, $30 an hour that they have been making at their jobs. Things are starting to hit home a little bit economically with them, and certainly GM has an incentive to want to see this deal approved because it's lost at least $1 billion in profits over the last month. So it's a good bet that this thing will be finally wrapping up. And I guess what everybody's going to be left with is the question about, you know, why this strike had to happen at all. And we can talk about that if you want.
Yeah, and I mean, as far as the incentive for the union workers, they were looking for higher pay, more benefits, more investment into the manufacturing plants themselves. And it seems like that was all a part of the deal when they came out of this yesterday.
Yeah, and but the highlights of what they got, they get wage increases in two of the next 4 years. In alternating years, they get lump sum increases, so that structure helps GM hold down costs a little bit, which is a very important objective for GM in this deal. The UAW also gets something like $9 billion in commitments from GM over the next over the life of the agreement in terms of investment in U.S. facilities, creating about 9,000 jobs. Their health care plan, which is remains the Cadillac of all industrial healthcare plans across America, and it really wasn't touched. Importantly, they got a concession from GM to hurry up the amount of time that it takes to turn a lower paid temporary worker into a full-time, full UAW dues paying worker. It was 8 years, now it's 3 years. That was an important thing for the union. But General Motors was able to withstand the union's efforts to get them to reverse the plans they announced to close three big factories, UAW-represented factories in the U.S., and some other things. And I guess kind of what we're left with here is the basic outlines of this deal were in place a month ago when the union struck. So GM is kind of offering what they did then, only things are sweetened here and there. And that was important to the UAW leadership to be able to tell the members, look, we got better for you after this strike and after we advise you to walk out. And that's what selling the deal is all about. That's why it's a pretty good bet that they're going to be able to get this thing ratified, get this strike over, and return GM to full production, and overtime, actually, to try and make up some of what the company has lost.
Right. I believe I saw somewhere that to make up for the nearly $1 billion that GM lost within this time frame of the strike, they'll be implementing some 9,000 overtime hours for these workers?
Yeah, absolutely. And the good thing for GM is, and that's why this thing, I mean, in some ways it's kind of a big yawn. Unfortunately, it's a billion-dollar yawn. But GM is going to be able to make up a lot of what it lost. It had pretty good inventories at dealers in advance of the strike. There's not much evidence that showroom traffic or sales has really been affected that much. So there may be a few models here and there for a while that customers for GM will not be able to get because of the strike. But overall, it's just not going to have that much of an effect. And really, the net result of all this is, you know, a strike at GM, even of a month, is not such a huge deal to the U.S. economy as it would have been a generation ago. you know, when you probably would have had folk singers out there, and the American public much more sort of sympathetic to what the union wanted. GM is just not as big a piece of the national economy as it was. But everybody's happy that this thing looks like it's going to be over, because it was starting to become a disruption to the economy. It was starting to become a problem for individual UAW workers, and certainly it was not looking good for Mary Barra, who overall has done a pretty good job of leading GM into this new era for the auto industry.
Right, especially as the industry itself shifts to an idealistic electric world that that so many of us have thought about and hoped for, as for environmental reasons and financial reasons. But so as we look at these negotiations and the power of unions, is, and you wrote about this a little bit earlier, the role that Mary Barra played within these negotiations, is this the way that things are going to be handled from here on out as far as negotiations and union talks, where it has to be the full power of the union and the very, very top of these organizations? Otherwise, nothing will get done.
Yeah, I mean, it's always kind of been that way to some extent, but certainly when Barra got to the point where, look, this is going to start to nick the company pretty badly, she got involved. And, yeah, as I and other people observed at the beginning of this strike, it was a leadership issue in the sense that a lot of people felt that Gary Jones, the president of the union, had been, you know, has been badly compromised by the fact that he and some of his top people are the object of a widening federal criminal investigation of the union that has to do with spending at conventions and abusing union funds and just kind of that typical corruption kind of thing. And the UAW has never had a problem really with corruption, and with his administration, it seems like maybe there is a problem there. So basically, Gary Jones was compromised. So how is he going to get his membership to adopt a deal that he negotiates with General Motors? Well, maybe a one-month strike would, you know, show the membership how tough he is and that he can deliver. And I think there's a strong dynamic of that here. So in that sense, and in the sense that Mary Barra, you know, didn't want this thing to get away from her, the leadership factor is, you know, really important to how this worked out.
Yeah, from the story of Mary Barra stepping in the handful of years ago all the way up until now, really trying to just keep things moving along and no blips on the radar. But speaking of that federal probe, I imagine that will be, you know, something that will be not be taken lightly, the corruption probe that's put into this union and looked into later on. How will that impact the union going down the road? Will, since this contract will be tentatively agreed upon, will that be changed possibly later, or will there be, after this contract, implementations that will be changed from the union later on?
It's going to affect the UAW down the road for sure, because the fact is that the union membership overall across the country is only a fraction of what it was a generation ago. I think at peak it was something like 1.5 million UAW members in the auto industry, and elsewhere now it's, you know, about a third of that, maybe not even down to a quarter. So it's, the union overall is continuing to struggle with relevance. Another fact is that there are right to work laws even in the state of Michigan, the home of the UAW. So the union is under pressure all the time to prove that it's actually worthwhile for the high dues that its members have to pay. You know, what's the union delivered to you? Well, there's more pressure than ever on UAW leadership to deliver, and that's one of the dynamics behind the strike, too. It's kind of like the UAW saying, hey, in this era of right to work, you know, there's still a lot of wallop that we could pack here, and this is what we end up doing for you if you become a union member. But the criminal probe really could end up with a very serious impact on top leadership, and, you know, that's not good for the future of the union.
Yeah, of course, and the larger industry as well. And I imagine for the future union workers that will be into the UAW later on down the road, they can take a page from this book and say, oh, I remember when the strike happened over at GM and workers were on strike for a month, 48,000 of them, and they still got paid through their union. And that was the protection that they sought. And that was what they were proving. So
yeah, I hear a folk song coming along. Right. Too bad Woody Guthrie's no longer around, but
exactly.
Yeah, it'll certainly be part of union lore for sure.
Right. Well, and shifting a little bit towards the larger industry as a whole, looking at it from a Fiat Chrysler and Ford perspective, what will they be able to take from this? Is this something that their unions will be able to use as leverage in the conversations with their unions and their manufacturers? Or is this something that's just sort of a blip on the industry radar?
No, what happens, and they'll pretty much follow traditional form in this sense, is that now the UAW, well, especially assuming there is a ratification vote in favor of this by the GM rank and file, the UAW will move on to Ford and Chrysler and pretty much use the GM deal as a template for getting deals done there. Now, in the past, there's been a benefit to the first company the UAW ends up dealing with, because that company gets to focus negotiations on its needs. In this case, GM, even though it was the leader in the negotiations, you know, probably would not rather have taken a strike just so it could have its own needs reflected in the final deal. But they'll take the deal to Ford Chrysler with some modifications, typically, and most likely it'll also be adopted at those companies. You know, they're not going to be struck. The union has kind of gotten what it needed out of the industry, in a way, from General Motors, and so that pattern will go on to Ford and Chrysler. And, you know, it'll all be okay as long as the industry and the level of sales in the U.S., you know, doesn't tank as it has in the past. It's eased off in the last couple of years, but it hasn't shown any sign really of dwindling significantly. And if the economy continues to perk along, and obviously it's a big question right now, then the industry ought to be able to absorb this deal pretty well.
Right, and we'll be keeping our eyes on it, and I know Dale Buss will be as well. Dale Buss, contributor at Forbes, Wall Street Journal, and Chief Executive Magazine, keeping his eyes on the manufacturing world and everything else going on in Detroit in the Michigan Midwest area. Dale, thank you so much for joining us today.
You bet.
We are at 5:50 a.m. on the WGN opening bell. We'll be back to check a lot more of your business headlines, numbers, but first we'll be checking in with Mary Vandevelt here with your traffic update.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the opening bell on the Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook. A mixed day on U.S. trading, mostly down, though, trending down. The Dow Jones down negative 22.82 points. S&P 500 down nearly 6%. And the NASDAQ down nearly 24.52%. Now we turn to Orion Samuelson with our latest on agriculture and commodities.
The markets yesterday, from Wall Street to commodity markets, fairly quiet from the standpoint of price movement. At the end of the day yesterday, we saw December wheat up 7.25 cents a bushel, but December corn ended a penny lower, and November soybeans ended down 5.5 cents a bushel. Livestock futures, Mercantile Exchange yesterday, February lean hog contract, ended the day down 25 cents a hundredweight. The October live cattle contract up $1.50, and the October feeder cattle contract ended the day higher, up 45 cents a hundredweight. Farmers National Company, they've been around now for 90 years, and they announced yesterday, as they celebrate their 90th anniversary, the growing landowner services company will also see a changing of the guard. Iowa native Jim Farrell, president and CEO, has been with Farmers National Company since 1986, and he is retiring effective December 31st of this year. And taking over as the new president of Farmers National Company is David Englund, who has been with Farmers National Company for quite some time as well. I guess this doesn't come as a surprise, the discovery of another African swine fever case, this one in South Korea, the seventh case of African swine fever in that country. And it occurred in a wild boar, not a domestic pig, but it was found dead near the border with North Korea. That disease just keeps spreading. That's Agribiz News. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thank you, Orion. A few other headlines before we wrap things up for you today. Netflix beat earnings. Shares of Netflix soared more than 10% in extended trading Wednesday. After the company released its earnings report for the third quarter, the company reported mixed results with an earnings beat and a miss on domestic subscriber adds, while revenue slightly missed analyst expectations. Those subscriber numbers are what a lot of investors are looking at when they look to Netflix for its earnings abilities and its money-making abilities. Turning now to IBM, they missed their earnings. They missed Wall Street estimates for quarterly revenue on Wednesday, as its global technology service unit was hit by weakness in some European markets, sending its share down 5% in extended trading. Sales from global technology services, IBM's biggest unit that caters to the world's largest data centers, were weighed down by the lower client business volumes, mainly in the UK and Germany. And the chief financial officer, James Cavanaugh, said on a post-earnings call, revenue from IBM's cloud service rose 11% to $5 billion, helping the company beat expectations for the quarter. Now in the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for today on Thursday, October 17th, a handful of economic reports are out today, beginning with monthly housing starts. Analysts expecting a downtick from the month before, along with weekly jobless claims. And the Philadelphia Fed shares their business outlook survey just before the opening bell, with indicators showing a sharp drop from last month. Along with earnings that we will see today, earnings reports continue to flood into the market today. E-Trade Financial Corporation, WD-40 Company, just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, October the 17th. That's the opening bell. I'm Bennett Wake Knights. Thanks for tuning in with us today. We'll be wrapping things up. The news is next from the Northwestern WGN Newsroom.